Welcome to Planantials Podcast. I'm Barbara Ginty, your host, and I am a CFP, so a certified financial planner, and the creator of the online planantial classes. Today, I have my first guest with me, Emily, and we're going to talk a little bit about her finances. Hi, Emily.
Hi, Barbara. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. So tell us a little bit about yourself. What's your job? What's your income? Give us the overview.
Sure. So I am 33. I live in New York. And I currently work in education, the administrative side, and I make 87K a year.
Well, that's great.
Yeah, I guess so.
And how have you done so far with savings? Savings and... favorite topic.
Bane of my existence. I have good faith every paycheck that I will have something to put into savings, and it doesn't always happen. I have a spreadsheet at home where I plan where everything's going to go.
Oh, well, that's more than most.
Yeah. Well, I put some in savings the last paycheck, and I got to a point like a week later, I was like, oh no, I need that. So it doesn't always work.
And what about debt? I always like, before we kind of delve into what stresses you out about money, but have an overview. So you make $87,000, mm-hmm. You make a best efforts to save. And what about, do you have student loans, credit cards?
So student loans, I have probably about 9,000 left in student loans.
That's great. Good job. What did you start with?
I started, undergrad was 20 and grad school was 5. So 25,000.
Very good.
So I'm down to, I'll be done with two loans this year, and then I'm just chipping away at that last one. It's got about 7,000 on it.
Okay. Very good. So what is your biggest stressor when it comes to money?
Well, I don't want to use my credit cards. And I would say in recent years, I've had to use them more often than I would like to. But I've been good in the past 5 months. I have not used them at all. But as a result, I'm still living very much paycheck to paycheck. And, you know, 5 days before payday, I'm like, oh, I have $20 in my bank account.
You're just like putting that card down and hoping it goes through.
Kind of.
It's a little bit.
Or I'll just be like, well, I guess I'm seeing no friends. I'm not going to use the subway. I'm not going to do anything. It's just working home.
So walk me through a week. So where is the money going, do you think?
Well,
how long have you been in this role making $87,000?
About a year and a half, 2 years.
And what were you making before that?
Oh, I'm embarrassed to say.
No judgment zone.
I was probably, and I worked at a different job in a different location, not New York City. I was making $35,000 a year.
Okay, wow. So this is a big jump with this position.
Yeah, it is.
Wow. Well, good for you.
Thanks.
Okay, so walk me through how you're spending your money on a weekly or if not monthly basis.
Sure. So, like I said, I use a spreadsheet and I've been using the same one for about 5 years.
Did you create it?
No, I got it from a friend, which was really helpful. So I use it every single, I get paid twice a month. And the day I get paid, I pay all my bills.
Okay.
That's the first thing I do. So rent is the paycheck I get on the first of the month. And all my other bills is the paycheck I get on the 15th of the month.
So give me an idea. What is rent versus your student loan payment?
Rent is a lot. My student loan payment is probably a quarter of what my rent is. Yeah, per month. So,
and that's a big difference about living in the city where you said before you weren't living in New York.
Absolutely. Yeah. The cost of living is so different, so much higher. But yeah, the paycheck that I got to pay my rent, that's a really tight 2 weeks until the next paycheck. So, yeah, you usually don't see me from the 1st to the 15th.
I'm not social during that time. Only available to make plans after the 15th of
pretty
the month.
Much, okay. Pretty much.
Good to know.
Yeah.
So your first paycheck of the month is usually absorbed by almost...
Rent, yeah. And I probably have like maybe $500
Is that like $1,500, $2,000 a month?
$1,600.
Okay, so that's without utilities.
Yeah, that's without utilities. That's without all
without
the extra stuff.
Without cell phone.
How much do I pay?
Well, so that first paycheck really just covers your rent, utilities, kind of more of your basics.
Pretty much. Any other costs that I owe the rest of the month, I save... I've moved all my due dates to usually the 20th of the month.
Right, because you're available after the 15th.
So I am. I'm available after the 15th, and I can cover my bills after the 15th. So
do you think when it comes down, your ultimate stressor with money is the fact that you're kind of living paycheck to paycheck?
Still, yeah. Even with You know,
does that surprise you with the increase in income?
Yes and no.
Okay.
I mean, moving to New York, I knew the cost of living was going to be higher. I knew all that, but it still kind of blows my mind. This is the most I've ever made in my life. And I'm still living paycheck to paycheck, and I'm still struggling to put money in savings.
Okay, so let's see if we can figure this out. What are you putting towards student loans each month?
Overall amount?
Mm-hmm.
400.
Wow. Okay, so that's a big part of your budget.
It is.
That will be freed up in the near term.
Yeah, I'm hoping by June to have two loans completely paid off.
Okay.
If I keep on my schedule. So I'll just have one left. And it's really tempting after June, because I know who I am, that extra money, I just want to use it. But I know the smart person would probably put it towards my last loan to pay it off sooner, but I don't trust myself to follow through.
Well, what if you split the difference with yourself? So what if you took what you're going to save starting in June and took half of it and put it towards the next loan to get it done? Kind of met yourself in the middle.
Uh-huh. I could work with that.
And then you take that. So what are you going to, starting in June, you're going to have another $200 a month in your budget?
Roughly.
So mm-hmm. What if you took 100 and put it towards a principal only payment on that last loan? Is that last loan sticking around for a reason? Is it high interest or why?
Oh, I'm glad you asked that question.
Okay.
Because maybe you'll know the answer to this, because I don't know.
Okay.
This loan has been the bane of my existence. This last one. It was only a $10,000 loan, and I have not missed a payment in 12 years.
How do you still have it?
Exactly. Why is my balance only around $7,000?
So in 12 years, you've paid off $3,000?
Well, that's what they're telling me.
Who is it with?
Is it
Great Lakes or Navient?
No, it's a loan through, it's a group in Michigan because I went to school there. And I remember when I was in grad school, because I asked if I could defer my loans mm-hmm. in grad school, and that was kind of like a struggle for them to understand.
That you were still in school.
Well, long story short, I was in a full-time program. That was a two-year program. But in order to be considered full-time to the bank loan people, I needed to have at least 9 or 10 credits per semester enrolled. But my program was only 7 or 8 credits per semester. It was an education hybrid program where I was working full-time in the classroom and taking classes at night.
Got it.
So they did not consider me a full-time student, so they would not defer my loan, but I couldn't afford to pay it.
Right, because you were working full. Well, you were working as part of credit,
right.
Not working to get a paycheck.
Right, right. So during that time, that was very difficult. Like I was definitely not making the minimum by any means, but I was paying like maybe like $25 towards it because that's all I could afford.
Okay.
But
and
I
this is the monster that has actually, in 12 years' time, you should have more than paid it off.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm sure I've more than paid $10,000 toward this loan. Because after those 2 years, I got right back on schedule again. But I remember having conversations with the loan people, and I realized all my payments were going towards, now I always forget.
There's two. Yeah, okay. So there's
principal and
you can't see this, but she's kind of imitating with her hands that there's two sections of her loan. The section over here that's scary and the section over here that's good. So the two sections are interest, which is what you're paying to borrow, and then principal, which is the amount you actually asked for.
Yes, exactly. And during that conversation, I realized all my payments up until that point mm-hmm. had only gone to interest. It had not gone towards the principal.
Absolutely.
And I was like, wait, what?
Well, I always like to remind people, the lending, especially when it comes to student loans, in my opinion, it's incredibly predatory, which is why we're seeing some lawsuits happen with the larger lenders. And I just said this to my sister the other day. They are not your friend at all. They are out to make a lot of money and not make it very easy for you to pay it off in an efficient manner. So if I had to take a guess without looking at it, and I'm more than happy to look at it after this session if I can help you with it. But probably what's happening is they're capitalizing the interest, which is where they take the interest that you hadn't paid and they mm-hmm. add it back to the principal, which is the amount you originally mm-hmm. borrowed. So you said you originally borrowed $10,000.
Yeah.
So let's say while you were in grad school, you accrued $2,500 of interest because you hadn't paid it, which is mm-hmm. fine. You were working, right? You're mm-hmm. trying to get your higher education so that you could go and get this great job that doubled your salary.
Right. Right.
So they took that $2,500 and added it back to what you originally borrowed, which was $10,000. So now they're taking $12,500 and adding, calculating the interest on that higher amount.
Mm-hmm.
So you're paying interest on your interest.
I
that, my folks, is a dangerous concept. So I think that's what's happening.
It might be, because I remember kind of being in an argument with them, but also not having the knowledge to back up my
frustration. You're like, I know this is wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know why it's wrong, but it feels like you're taking advantage of me.
Absolutely. That was the basic conversation. I was like, isn't there a way that I can put a majority of my payments towards the principal? And they said, they just shrugged and they were like, no.
And I just did this with my sister the other day, and I'm almost positive that student loans are a federally protected class of debt, which is why they can't be discharged in bankruptcy. And she did the same thing. She didn't, sorry, Erin, but you didn't really listen. had she listened, she wouldn't have been in this situation. What her issue was is I tried to help her pay off one of the loans, and they said, no, you can't make a principal only payment, which it shouldn't be that way. You should always be able to make a principal only payment, which is why student loans are so scary, because unlike a mortgage or a credit card where they're clear and there's rules, federal rules around the lending practices and to prevent them from being predatory, there aren't those rules in place for student loans. Mm-hmm. So that loan is the one that will stick around after June?
Yeah. Yeah. I would say probably by June, I'll maybe have $6,500 left on it or something.
And you've been
like
paying
that.
This for 12 years?
Yes.
Is this like chained to your leg? Like this loan that will never go away?
It pretty much. And I promise you, I never missed a payment except for those two years in grad school.
I'm not judging.
Where I would make a payment, but it wasn't the minimum. Like, let's say the minimum was
$100. No, I'm not judging. I think the onus on this is the loan company not giving you. So here's what I think. I think that if we took a look at your loans, which we can totally do right after this, because you really have three loans you're trying to pay off. Mm-hmm. With a total balance of $9,000,
yeah,
that $400 a month that you're paying can go way farther if we are more strategic with how the money is applied. Because right now, are you applying it how you want to those three loans, or are they telling you what amount goes to each loan?
The two that I'll be able to pay off in June, I know they're going right to principal.
Okay.
And I've had very little interest accrued on them, which is why I've been able, like, I'm almost.
But those are a different lender.
They are all different lenders, yeah.
Okay, so
this third one is. Just
so I actually kind of think maybe once we look at this, we probably rejigger it a little bit and put more towards the one that is probably more predatory, the one that you can't get rid of no matter how much you put towards.
Yeah.
And reverse it. And then maybe rather than finishing in June, you finish in October, but we're done. Because $400 is a large.
It's a good amount to put towards it. You're right.
It's a lot that you're putting towards it in terms of your monthly. So you should be able to kick them all.
Okay. So you'll have to keep me. You'll have to check in with me.
Well,
because
I'll be so tempted
to use that extra money
I think what we can do, if you can commit to like sucking it up a little longer. You've already done it. If we could totally get rid of them, which I absolutely think we can with that payment.
Yeah, no, you're giving me some hope.
Okay, no, there's definitely hope. The problem is they're not going to tell you how to do it because they don't want you to get rid of it because you're making a lot of money off your interest.
Yeah. Yeah, they are.
Okay, so I think we can probably solve this. You might not be done in June, but maybe let's say you're done in September, October. Mm-hmm. We just have to take a look at the interest rates and what's happening. But I think what's probably happening with that terrible loan is that they're capitalizing the interest, which is...
I think you're right on. That's exactly what they're doing.
Horrible, because for making on-time consistent payments for 12 years, it should be gone. It's not a large amount, and your payment's $400. So that's...
I know.
Terrible.
It is
terrible. But sometimes it's easier just not to look at it, right?
Yeah, I mean, some days I'm just like... It's like being passive aggressive with it. It's like, I know I should probably, towards that loan, put a minimum of $125 a month just to that loan. Because I think the minimum payment is like $70. And some days I'm like, some months I'm like, you're just going to get your $70. Because you suck and I want to go out and have cocktails. So, you know.
I'm going to have a drink and not worry about
And not worry about you.
I think that, and then once you get those paid off, you have $400 back in your budget.
I know. I've been dreaming of that day.
So many cocktails to be had.
So many cocktails to be had. And new outfits.
Lots of new outfits. So it seems like your budget is basically made up of rent, student loans, and then you have very little left over for what you want to do. Are there any other big budget expenses?
I have been really good with not going out to eat or drink a lot. So I always have a certain amount budgeted for groceries. And I always bring a lunch to work. So
oh, that's impressive.
Always. I almost never go out to eat during the week. I probably haven't gone shopping in a while. Like, I don't know where this sudden discipline's coming from, but I suddenly have discipline like the past like maybe 5-6 months. But it wasn't always like that. It was always like anxiety ridden, like, oh my gosh, can I cover everything this month? So
you're doing good with the budget.
I'm doing better.
Better with the budget.
But it's been a journey.
Everything is.
Everything's a
Just
journey.
Like working out. It's all a journey.
All a journey.
So I think your biggest obstacle is really the student loans. Is that what stresses you out the most?
Yeah, I just want to be able to not feel like, I think you called it, what did you call it? Like the thing weighing me down, like the anchor around my leg or something like that.
The ball and chain.
Because I for sure feel like that. And I see my other friends in their 30s, you know, they're traveling, they're doing this and that and things that I want to do, but I don't necessarily, I feel guilty when I invest in things like that because I'm like, oh, but I still have this thing that I, you know,
can't get rid of.
And, you know, the responsible part of me is like, no, don't do it. Don't go on a trip. I'm like, you're right.
So once we kick your loans, which I think we absolutely can do, I'll take a look at them and show you how to kind of reallocate the monies. And so, you know, because do you know what your interest rates or anything like that is?
Off the top of my head, no. I want to say one of them is 8%.
Okay, so that's really high. Because just like right now, the banks are paying you zero.
Yeah.
That's a high one. So, because money...
Like if I ever need it to get a loan in the future for something, what is a reasonable interest rate?
So right now, interest rates are at historic lows. And it really depends on your credit rating, what they're going to loan to you, which is if they determine how worthy you are. So banks typically are risk adverse. They take calculated risk. So they don't want to loan to you unless they know you're definitely going to pay them back.
Okay.
So depending on where you fall with credit worthiness, your rate is either going to be a little higher or a little lower. But so for instance, I just had a girlfriend and she refinanced her loans for a fixed rate of 2.95%. Now that was with a guarantor, so which is different, meaning someone had to co-sign it, which has its own risk involved in it. But I would say that's kind of about where the rates are, somewhere between 2 and 4%. So the way to think about your rate is, I always call it the rule of 72, which is if you're, think about it from the other way, from investments. So if your investments make 7.2% compounding, meaning on a regular basis they're making that, not simple, your money doubles every 10 years. So your loan rate is higher than that, which means that if you're not paying the interest, the balance, it will be growing every...
Oh, gosh.
I know.
Oh, my God. That made my stomach hurt.
Sorry. Let me give you some more Prosecco.
Prosecco, yes.
That will make it better.
I will take it.
But that's why you want to totally tackle it. It's worth kind of sucking it up for another 3 to 6 months and maybe being strict with your budget as you already are. Because then you can totally wipe it out. And then on an annual basis, you'll have almost $5,000 more a year in your budget, which is, you could easily take $2,000 for a vacation fund and then $3,000 you could put towards retirement or some sort of savings.
Okay.
Because we don't want to work forever.
No.
I mean, I don't want to work forever.
No.
I don't know about you.
And I'm glad you brought up retirement. I know we're only in our early 30s, but like that has actually been a thing on my mind of knowing, not to switch gears from
student
loans or anything.
This is whatever you need help with.
But just I've seen my mom go through like my dad's retirement in recent years and all of that. So it got me more conscious of like, oh, I should start thinking about that and putting stuff away and whatnot. And I have a 401k and I started it about 5 years ago. But I was just, because I wasn't making a lot 5 years ago.
Wait, so 5 years ago you started one with your last job?
With my last job, yes.
Okay, and you contributed at your last job?
Yeah, I contributed. I mean, it wasn't a great deal because I didn't have a lot, but...
something is better than nothing.
Yeah, I mean, is it true? Because my understanding was the thing that we have on our sides as younger people is time. Because
100%, yes.
Is that what are they?
Because even
is
though
that the
I
compound
feel
interest you're talking about,
that's exactly right. Even though I feel old in my early 30s,
right?
I don't know
how you feel. Me too. I don't know why.
Before the show, that happened, we started. We were talking about how our body aches when we go running, and that used to not happen. But we have a lot of time before retirement. And so you don't need a lot of money if you have a lot of time. So you're 100% correct on that.
Okay.
Because time helps you with compounding of interest. Because as I said, if your money doubles every 10 years, you have a lot more 10-year segments at 30 or 33 or 25 than you do when you're 55.
Got it. Right. Of course. That makes sense. Well, would you say, because I heard someone say this one time, and I'm not a financial person, so I wasn't like able to put it in full context, but... I think they said, oh yeah, you should always put like 6% of your income minimum into your retirement fund. Is that true?
There have been rules of thumb. I would say one of the rule of thumbs was a little higher, 10%. And I would say that I don't want to always say there's a hard, fast number of what you should set for retirement, because if you can't do it, I don't want to discourage people, because 10% might be too high for some people. It's always, as you said, better to get in it and be in the game than it is to not.
Okay.
But nowadays, with not having a pension, mm-hmm. and Social Security being later, mm-hmm. the more that you can contribute to retirement earlier, the better.
Okay.
Because at some point you might need to stop, right? Like you might get married and have a family and decide I'm not going to work for a few years and not be participating.
That's true. I didn't think about
or that. Or lose a job. There's a lot of different factors that are going to happen because I just feel like as you get older, your life sometimes can be more serious with more adult issues happening. And mm-hmm. so in your 20s, at least in my experience, in my 20s, you can probably suck it up. You know, you came out of college, you're used to being on a ramen diet, right? Mm-hmm, you can put a bit more away. It's not, you know, higher percentage, maybe not as many dollars, but you have that time value on your side.
That's true. Okay. Which do you think is more important for like a millennial, like 20-something, 30-something person to focus on paying off loans and putting that the money towards that or not worrying that much and be like, yeah, I'm gonna put that 8% towards retirement or what?
Well, so for you specifically, because you're in the home stretch here.
That's true. I should have asked this question like 8 years ago.
So 8 years ago, I would say you have to have a balance. It doesn't depend on how much you have on student loans versus how much you have, you know, you want to get saving. You want to always do both. But for you specifically, you're in the home stretch. If we can come up with a plan of how to pay off those last three loans, and I want to tackle that one that has been unfortunately mm-hmm. growing for 12 years, I would say for you to focus on tackling that. And then now that you have money back in your budget, take part of it for today. So part of mm-hmm. it for that vacation fund that you've always wanted or shopping or whatever it mm-hmm. is that you want. And then part of that will go back into retirement.
Okay.
Now, are you in a retirement plan at work? This job?
Yes.
Does the school have a 403B?
I believe so. I believe so. That is a financial term that I...
word nobody knows about.
Maybe actually...
Would you like me to explain that?
I was about to say, please explain it because I can't remember... You know,
so the reason that sounds really complicated is because it's part of the IRS code. So okay. those are fun.
Well,
so,
what's the difference, between a 401k and a 403B? Because I may have reversed it because... Either my current job has a 401k and my last job was a 403b, or it was like the opposite. And I didn't know the difference and if I should, can you combine?
And there's no reason you should know, right? Because the way the code, the 401k versus 403b is really a code in our tax code. So if you want to look up information about a 401k, it's the 401k section of the tax code.
Okay.
That is why you don't really need, I mean...
Yeah, who has time to look that up?
You definitely don't have time, and nor do you ever want to read the tax code because it's quite boring. Okay, so 401k is typically for a public or private company, mm-hmm. and then 403bs tend to be for school districts or a nonprofit, something along those lines. So your school could be a 403b, and your former employer could have been the 401k.
Okay,
same types of money. You're deferring the money for later, you're deferring the taxes for later. Mm-hmm. But since right now you're living in New York City in a high, high tax bracket.
Yeah.
I know, thanks New York City.
Right.
But getting you into the work plan will actually, you'll be able to put more money away and you'll miss less out of your paycheck. So for instance, if you put 100 into, we'll say your 403B mm-hmm. at the school, you're not actually going to miss 100 out of your paycheck.
Really?
Right. Well, because taxes. For you to get it through payroll, you're going to lose $25
Okay. I get it.
Does that make sense?
Yes. Okay.
So I'm wrapping my head around the concept. You're going to get 100 in your savings plan.
Okay.
And you only miss 75, give or take, depending on where you fall tax-wise, in your paycheck.
Got it. Okay.
So you're already winning.
Got it.
Because you're saving on the taxes. And at least that money will be in the market working for you.
Oh, okay. That makes me feel better. Okay.
Right. So your dollar will go further.
I'm on board with that.
So what were you saying about your mom spending your dad's retirement?
Oh, right. So the reason that has been on my mind and the reason that I was like, oh, yeah, I should... start doing this.
Because I very rarely get asked about retirement.
Well, I mean, I think I started contributing when I was 27 or 28. So
Good job.
Yeah, something like that. But the reason why I was like, oh, I better get on this is because my mom was going through my dad's retirement because he had recently passed away. So she was going through all his financial stuff. Thank you. And but I watched her go through that process of figuring out what to do with his retirement. And she went to an accountant who set her up with a fixed income. And she was mostly a stay-at-home mom, but she was in the public schools for enough time to have a small little pension.
Okay, on her own.
Yeah, on her own, but it's small. And of course, I believe she'll be what age is Social Security now?
So like, earliest you can collect is 62, it's which you get a reduced amount, a permanently reduced amount. Okay. And then depending on when you're born, it's between 66 and 67 now. Okay. Remember when our grandparents talked about it was 65?
Yeah.
They've been rolling it back, which is why for people like us, it's going to be even later.
Even later.
Because they're going to keep rolling it back. And then the latest you can collect is at 70.
Got it. Okay. So she's probably collecting that now. She's 60.
But if your dad passed, she gets a widow benefit.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, a survivor benefit.
So she that's would collect, what she meant.
Yes. Because I've heard her. Your father's.
I've heard her talking about it. So she is doing well financially, but she did mention that her and my dad weren't even able to think about retirement or saving for retirement till 38.
Because you're 39. One of how many children?
We have a big family, one of eight kids, and my mom had me at age 35. So they already had five kids at age 35. And it wasn't until, around that time, they were like, oh, shoot, I suppose we should think about retirement. So they started putting money away or investing in a 401k or things like that. So thankfully, but that wasn't, that's not ideal. A lot of people nowadays probably start earlier than that. So me watching her go through his financial, files and get everything in order so that she's okay, because she's not working. She's 68. She'll be okay for a while. And but that was just good for me to see and be conscious
Absolutely.
Of. So that's why at age 27, 28, I was like, oh, I should probably think
about
this.
I'm sure
this.
That's like a wake up call to watch your mom go through that and probably wonder, is she going to be okay?
Exactly. I was worried about her and I was like, is she going to be all right? Is she going to have to move in with me? Like, what's going to go on? What's going to happen? But within about a year of my dad passing, she kind of figured out all the finances and she's on a fixed income, but it's definitely enough for her to be okay.
Did your dad have a pension too?
Both he and my mom worked in New York public schools for about 10 years. So I'm sure there's something from that pension, but then he moved on to IBM and another software company. And I think a majority of what she's getting now is probably from IBM.
That's good. So that was helpful probably for her. So she got his Social Security. Mm-hmm. He can step up, which is higher. Mm-hmm. If your mom stayed at home with the kids, she would get step up to his. And then the pensions, she would get her own and then hopefully part of his. Mm-hmm. And then whatever he saved. Mm-hmm. Which is good. Mm-hmm. Not that you wouldn't want your mom to live with you.
Right. But, no. I mean, maybe in 10, 15 years
or
something.
Yeah, maybe a little bit longer.
Right. I still want to feel a little young and have some freedom, but... I wouldn't mind that in the future. But seeing how she went through it, I was like, oh, this is very stressful. It was stressful until she was able to figure it out, speak with an accountant, and they went through everything. And I was like, oh, okay, she's all right. And they thought ahead, not as, they didn't start it as early as I feel like people think about nowadays. But I was like, all right, that's good for me to know.
But that was the impetus for you to be like, okay, I need to figure this out because I don't want to be in a position like that and then not be as well off as your mom.
Exactly.
So you got it all together.
Well, I appreciate that feedback because I definitely don't feel like that on a daily basis. But I am thinking about these things.
So I think the key for you is going to be figuring out your student loan payment to making sure that it's not advantageous for the lending company and advantageous for you. Mm-hmm. And then that way you can maybe, if you don't get it all paid off in June, but maybe all get it paid off in October and kind of sticking with it for a little bit longer. But then you have all that money back in your budget. So then you can be in the 403B and you could probably travel too.
I know. That's my biggest goal of my 30s.
Okay.
Really. I mean, obviously, I want to, get married and have children. And,
same.
You know,
find anyone who's a brother.
But, that's not happening now. So I'm like, let's travel.
Right. Take advantage of being single and free.
That's the goal until, something tells me otherwise. So I would really like to do that. But I have to say, it's these loans that have been holding me back.
Well, I feel if you could get $2,000 a year for a vacation, do you think that would be good?
Oh, yeah. That's more than enough.
Great. I think that is absolutely manageable. We can figure that out.
All right. I'm ready for that plan.
Okay. So we're going to figure out your loans and we'll make sure they get paid off and we'll set up your 403B and we'll get you a vacation fund. And we'll check back with you in 6 months. Do you have any other questions?
No, this was I feel a lot better talking about these things because usually it's me trying to wrap my head around it in my head. And, no one really likes to talk about finances.
I know, that's the thing that stinks about finances is everyone keeps it really quiet and everyone has the same struggles.
Yeah.
And the answer is usually in my opinion, come down to education, understanding what you're working towards mm-hmm. and how to get there. And it doesn't matter what your income level is or what your debt situation or saving situation, but the struggles are usually consistent. There's just a lack of information out there or mm-hmm. unbiased. Right. So the student loan company isn't going to educate you on this, right? Because they right. want to make money.
Right.
And they
right.
might, but they're not going to make it as digestible as they could.
Right. Right. So I mean, I appreciate you asking me to come here today and talk about this. It takes away the struggle and the shame of finances. And
oh, there should be no shame.
Well, there's no shame in this game. When you feel like you have a long road ahead, there's some shame in that.
No, you've done a great job tackling these loans. You're in the home stretch. You just want to make sure you're making every dollar work mm-hmm. for you.
Well, I appreciate that. So, yeah, thank you for the advice and our plan that we'll put together afterwards.
Yes, we'll talk to you in 6 months. So thank you for listening about how to make your money work for you.